Lawrence Wright's new book, 13 Days in September, is a day-by-day account of the 1978 Camp David conference when President Jimmy Carter convinced Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin and Egyptian President Anwar Sadat to sign a peace treaty, the first treaty in the modern Middle East, and one which endures to this day. Wright reveals the full extent of Carter's persistence in pushing peace forward, the way in which the participants of the conference, many of them lifelong enemies, attained it, and the difficulties inherent in the process and its outcome, not the least of which has been the still unsettled struggle between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Lawrence Wright is a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. The new book is 13 Days in September, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Lawrence Wright back to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Joe. Good to talk to you.
Always nice to speak with you. What brought you, especially after your last book, what brought you to this particular subject?
Well, actually, I was asked to write a play about the subject originally. In 2011, I got a call from Gerald Rafshoon, who was Jimmy Carter's media advisor when he was in the White House. And he asked if I would be willing, he said, this was his pitch, to write about Camp David, the time when a born-again Christian, a pious Muslim, and an Orthodox Jew went behind closed doors for 13 days and emerged with the only durable treaty in the Middle East. And I was very interested. I had lived in Atlanta when Carter was governor and when he ran for president, and I was living in Cairo when Sadat became president in 1970. And I traveled as a reporter to Israel on a number of occasions. So I felt it was an appropriate task for me. And then we got the Arena Stage in Washington to commission it. But I stipulated that I would treat it just like a New Yorker story or a book. I was going to go research it, to go to talk to all the surviving members of the delegations in the Middle East and to the Carters and other people that were on the American team.
So with that process, what is the story that you wanted to tell?
Well, you know, I think everybody feels discouraged about the idea of peace in the Middle East. It almost seems like a contradiction in terms. And yet there was a moment when that kind of mental inertia was set aside, when the idea that Jews and Arabs are destined to be eternal enemies was pushed out of mind, and three men sat down and made peace. So it's possible. I think, I guess if there's a message of 13 Days in September, is that peace is possible in the Middle East. And moreover, it's vitally necessary.
How much do we know of what happened and the dramatics that happened during those 13 days at Camp David?
You know, like most people, I hadn't given much thought to what actually occurred up there on that forested mountaintop at Camp David. All I knew was that they came out with this, you know, the Camp David Accords, but it was never a sure thing. It was moment to moment, every day, almost nauseating, emotional journey. And even on the very last day, the 13th day, Carter thought he finally had an agreement in hand. And one little detail was that Sadat had asked for Carter to supply a side letter about Jerusalem, restating American policy. And it had nothing to do, no legal standing. There are a lot of side letters attached to this accord. But he was restating American policy as it had been stated by three previous UN ambassadors, stating that East Jerusalem is occupied territory. And when that got into Begin's hands, he blew up. He demanded that Carter retract the letter, which Carter wouldn't do because he had made a promise to Sadat. And so Begin said, you know, the treaty is off, the signing is off. Bear in mind, the networks had already been alerted, and they were setting up the tables in the East Room of the White House, and everything blew apart on the very last day. And Carter was at the lowest point in his life, the most despairing moment. But he had made up some photographs of the three men negotiating at Camp David, and his secretary had gotten the names of Begin's 9 grandchildren. And so he, as a last gesture, he inscribed them with each of their names and said, "Love, Jimmy Carter." And then he took them over to Begin's cabin. And Begin was frigid, and the relationship was absolutely over. And he said goodbye, and he handed them the manila envelope. And Begin took a look at the first photograph, and it was the name of his granddaughter, Michal. And then the next one, Yonatan, and so on. And he began to weep. And Carter also began to weep. And he said, I had hoped to say, this is where your grandfather and I made peace in the Middle East. Then he walked back to his cabin to tell Sadat that the signing was off. And the phone rang, and it was Begin saying that he would sign.
And that really shows how fragile it all is and was.
Yeah, it was never a sure thing. And yet, in the 35 years since the Camp David Accords were signed, there's not been a single violation of the treaty between Israel and Egypt. There is another part of the Accords that is between Israel and the Palestinians, which has never been fully implemented, and every attempt since Camp David to bring peace between those two entities has been an attempt to try to finalize the Camp David Accords.
I know you spoke to President Carter extensively for the book. In addition to those interviews, where did your information come from? How much documentation was there about the day-to-day mechanics of the conference?
Well, there are very few books about Camp David. William Quant, who was on Carter's National Security Council, wrote a very useful book. And the only other book about Camp David was by Sadat's foreign minister, Mohammed Ibrahim Kamel. I went, as I said, to Israel and to Egypt and interviewed the surviving members of those delegations. There are a number of memoirs, both in English, Arabic, and Hebrew, that I was able to draw upon. And the Menachem Begin Library in Jerusalem was also extremely useful. So it was a matter of mining, you know, the data that was available in those archives, but also trying to capture the memories of these men. Some of them I was too late to reach, but those who were still alive were very helpful to me.
As far as President Carter and his recollections, in the book, you document that he kept a very rigid journal about what happened from moment to moment.
You know, he had a mistaken idea when he began Camp David. He thought he could just get these two honorable men behind closed doors and away from the press, and they would get to know each other, and they would come to like each other, and they would find their way to peace, and he would just act as a kind of camp counselor. But that blew up in his face on the very first day, and by the second day, he had to physically separate them. They couldn't stand to be in the same room. Rosalind said that she could hear them yelling at the top of their voices. And so by the fifth day, Carter came up with what he did not want to do, which he decided to produce an American plan. And this was really the turning point in Camp David. Neither the Egyptian nor the Israeli side could make peace with each other. But it got to be the point where they had to make an accommodation to the United States. Carter kept what he called a single text document. It was a yellow legal pad in which he sketched out some 30 points that needed to be resolved. And every day, he would go to each side trying to find language to resolve each of these points, and that way shaving down the areas of differences. But when they came down to the hardest parts, and each side had threatened to leave Camp David, Carter threatened them when Sadat had ordered the helicopter and we had all his bags packed, and he was flying back in a huff. Carter went to his cabin. He told me he'd never been angrier in his life. And he told Sadat that the relations between the U.S. And Egypt would be cut off. Egypt would be alone and helpless in the world, and their friendship would be over as well. And it was time for him to choose right now. And it was in Carter's terms, a come to Jesus type of moment. And similarly, when Begin said that the talks had broken down, Carter told him that he would let the American people, that it was Begin's fault. And he would go to the Congress and publicly blame him. And he even had his speechwriter draw up a speech in which he asked the Israeli people to vote down their government. So he was really, you know, willing to exercise all the power that he could bring to bear on these two parties. And each man wanted peace, but, you know, Sadat and Begin couldn't make peace with each other, but they could make concessions to the United States that would give them the peace that they wanted.
Obviously, it takes three in this case, but it does seem in reading the book that it was Carter, the one who had that legal pad, who kept on going back and sort of keeping track of it all and being the ringleader and saying, this is what has to happen.
Yeah, it would not have worked without Carter. You know, he was criticized for being a micromanager, and he certainly was. But in this case, it took a micromanager, and one as persistent and dedicated as Carter proved to be in that particular circumstance.
Well, it's a fascinating story. The book is entitled 13 Days in September, Carter, Begin, and Sadat at Camp David. Lawrence Wright, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
I certainly enjoy it. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, 13 Days in September, Carter, Begin, and Sadat at Camp David by Lawrence Wright, published by Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.